Hey, amigos, you know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome back, amigos. Spring is in the air, and with it, we join each other on National Fragrance Day. You couldn't have picked a better place to celebrate either. The swamp gas is really starting to bubble out here. Smells fine to Chester, he says. You know, somehow that doesn't surprise me. But let's head in, friend. Not sure how healthy it is to breathe in all that methane. Ah, now that's better than methane. And you know what else is a breath of fresh air? You can visit simplyscarypodcast.com and become a patron of the network. For as little as $7.99 a month, you'll get their entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. So tonight, we welcome back our good pal, the prolific P.D. Williams, a man caught in limbo between horror and humor. Speaking of which, he has a brand new book out which embodies that dilemma perfectly. Beneath Her Feet is a comedy horror novella we think you'll all love, in which we join Amelia, a quiet, intelligent loner longing for purpose and love, but with a habit of savage serial murder. And we follow Johnny, the manipulative jailbird fresh out of prison and hopelessly addicted to over-the-counter medications, and Timothy, the naive Mormon missionary just hoping to spread the good word without farting in anyone's living room. It's violent, it's hilarious, and I dare say, it's essential. Now, what were we talking about again? Oh yeah, that's right. Craig and Lorna are back this week with another misadventure. So, without further delay, if you'd be so kind and let me get to it already, from author P.D. Williams, author of Beneath Her Feet, the genre-bending and earth-shaking new book now available on Audible.com, narrated by good old Jeff Sturtevant, who has absolutely no shame about lengthy and gratuitous plugs. I give you Craig's White Devil.
No, no, no!
The man yelled, throwing his empty rifle to the ground. He raced through the dark winter forest like a frightened animal. He was unsure how much longer he could evade the monstrous bear-like creature. He tore through clutters of brush, their arm-like limbs grazing him as he fought to break free of their prickly grasps. The loud snaps of the yielding timber behind him were getting closer. He saw a tree ahead with limbs low enough to climb. Without slowing, he leaped on the bushy pine and clawed his way to the top. He was halfway up when the creature skidded to a halt, slamming into the base of the tree. The force was so strong, the man almost lost his grip.
Please go away! I don't deserve to die like this!
The creature lurking below had no eyes, but it recognized the sound and scent of its struggling prey. Its raging hunger screamed for meat and bone, but nature had denied it the ability to climb. Dank heavy drool dripped on the wood's damp floor as the famished creature circled the tree, eager for the man to fall.
It can't get up,
the man said, as fragments of hope made their way into his frazzled mind. He waited anxiously, praying the creature would give up and wander away, but it remained. The angry animal continued circling the tree, strategizing its next assault. After a few interminable minutes, it stood to its full height of 12 feet, a mountain of hunger and horror. It swung its enormous arm at the tree like a heavy axe. The powerful strike of its curved claws sliced an enormous chunk out of the thick bark, propelling the splinter in pieces several feet away. The man hugged the tree in a death grip as it teetered to one side.
I'm sorry for shooting you! Please let me live!
He shouted, as if the creature understood his words. The creature took another swipe at the tree. This time, it removed enough wood to weaken the haven to the point of near collapse. The pummeled pine swayed back and forth like a punch-drunk fighter about to hit the mat. Upon realizing that all was lost, the man began howling a song of terror. The soulless killer below maneuvered itself under him. It stretched open its wet mouth like a baby bird awaiting fresh worms, its breath reeking of rotten guts and certain death. Finally, the tree snapped, sending the flailing man down into the manhole-sized opening filled with grinding fangs. He couldn't wait to die. Craig and Lorna sat together on the sofa, perusing travel destinations. Or at least Lorna was. Craig accepted Lorna was always going to be the one who got to decide where they were going. So he might as well roll with it. All he had to do was pretend to be engaged and grunt his approval whenever she asked his opinion on a travel destination that piqued her interest.
I think we should follow through on what I said a while back about going someplace cold like Canada or Alaska,
Lorna said.
Why does it have to be a cold place? Craig asked. We've always had a good time hanging out down south.
Craig's lack of imagination frustrated Lorna.
Do you mean that road trip to Tybee Island where we nearly got done in by an army of snot? That was almost as fun as the time you dragged me to Fuster Cluck, South Carolina, to visit the famous Nipples Museum. Can't we do something different for a change?
Okay, okay. Just keep us on budget. Canada's gonna be too expensive, so shoot for somewhere cheap in Alaska.
Fine,
Lorna sighed.
I'll see what I can turn up.
As Lorna consulted her laptop on travel packages, Craig slumped over an arm of the sofa and nursed his fourth Dingle Daddy's beer. Channel surfing, he found the end of one of his favorite shows, Whorehouse Rescue, a spinoff of the show Bar Rescue. As the credits rolled, a rough male announcer's voice took over.
Whorehouse Rescue is sponsored by the following. Sweet Mama Barbecue, Easy Now Malt Liquor, Tyree's Custom Teeth Grills, and...
Slinky sex music played in the background as a diminutive black man popped up on screen. A worn-out afro wig covered his head, an oversized powder blue tux draped over his spindly frame. He smiled brightly and began his spiel.
Yo, pimp! Have y'all ever had to deal with one of your valued employees being unable to hook up with a client due to an automotive malfunction? Shit, fear no more, my bros and hoes, cause help is on the way. I'm Slappy Cha-Cha Jackson, owner of Toyo Ho. Dial us up and let one of my bitches use her 4-inch long designer nail tip to go clickety-clackety on the keyboard. She'll locate the first available driver. Let me introduce y'all to one of my able crew who'll come to the aid of your damsels in distress.
Slappy waved someone over, and a bony, drunk-looking woman in a tight, glittery red dress and purple wig joined him. Standing 2 feet taller than her boss, she leaned down and kissed him on the cheek.
Hi, baby.
Slappy grinned slyly.
Oh, girl, that sugar is sweet.
Then, turning to the camera, said,
Here's my top employee, Kirby Boots. Say hey, sweet thing.
Kirby swayed as if she were on a rocking boat.
Hi.
Slappy stood on his toes and kissed the drunkard on her chin.
Mwah. That'll do, baby girl. You just wander off now and get comfy, cause Big Daddy gonna tuck you in when he's finished.
After Kirby staggered away, Slappy walked closer to the camera.
So like I was saying, don't let that money walk out your door because you got a broke-down hoe. Give me Slappy Cha-Cha Jackson a call at 1-800-TOYO-HO. That's 1-800-TOYO-HO. Can't wait to see y'all at the party.
Well, this sucks.
Lorna cursed, slamming the lid down on her laptop.
If we want to do some sightseeing in Alaska and have enough for food and lodging, we're going to have to go with one of those smaller travel agencies. I found one named Leonard's Discount Odysseys. They put you up in a place called the Blue Balls Motel in a town called Moose Dick, Alaska. The price includes two meals a day served back to back between midnight and 3 a.m. An experienced guide will take us on a tour of the surrounding forests and trails. Everyone gets a free ball cap, t-shirt, and a small medical kit containing band-aids, cough drops, and a desk stapler for the nasty stuff.
Well, that sounds pretty decent. What about airfare?
It says here near the bottom that they can provide transportation on Plummet Airlines, and that they offer a special discount if we're willing to sit on the pilot's beer cooler so it don't tip over during the flight.
Craig stroked his chin.
Gee, I don't know about that one. Sounds a little sketchy to me.
Well, it's either that or driving, and we don't want to be gone from El Superbo that long. You know how pouty he gets when he has to stay with Mama. She hardly ever plays cards with him, and when she does, she cheats. Even worse, she feeds him cheap dog foods and steals his cigars.
Yeah, but he humps her cats and eats their poop, so I guess that keeps the score even. As for the trip, is this package the best we can afford?
I crunched the numbers, and this is our best and only option. Come on, Craig, you promised me we'd go to Alaska.
Craig groaned.
Yeah, I guess I did, didn't I? Okay, if it'll make you happy, then let's pull the trigger. When can we leave?
I'll have to stop the mail, reschedule my salon customers, buy a negligee, hide Junior's body.
Whoa there, gal! What's that one thing you mentioned you need to take care of?
Which one do you mean?
How's about the scary and demented one?
You mean the body?
No, the negligee.
Craig and Lorna laid their two suitcases on the floor in front of them. Then they strapped themselves to the wooden picnic bench bolted to the floor with the duct tape the flight attendant had issued them.
Are you sure this contraption will get us to Alaska?
Craig asked Lorna.
I checked out the airline. I couldn't find any news about crashes, so I guess they're safe enough.
The craft in question was a small, shabby plane with two props on either wing. Someone had painted the airline's name over the previous one, Donnie's Dust Cropper and Party Plane Incorporated. Besides Craig and Lorna, 10 other souls were on board, 14 if you added the pilot and flight attendant. Once the passengers had secured themselves, a tall, heavyset woman in a Plummet Airlines t-shirt slammed and locked the door to the plane. Soon, a thin, scratchy voice egressed from a speaker on the ceiling.
Hey, everybody. I'm your captain, Ernest Tittle. I want to welcome y'all to Plummet Airlines Flight Number 3. The FFA took our other two out of commission, so this'n's all we got. To ensure your comfort and safety, well, safety anyways, your flight attendant, Big Girl, is going to demonstrate what to do in case of an emergency. Hit it, Big Girl.
Hey, y'all. I'm Big Girl. In the event of a sudden drop in altitude, y'all need to put on your oxygen masks. Quickly take the brown lunch bag taped over to the bottom of your seat, press it to your face, and try to breathe normally. In case of a water landing, I'll chuck a wooden door outside. The first one to reach it can get on top like Kate Winslet in Titanic. Leave the rest of the losers to freeze to death. As soon as we leveled off, I'll pass out some complimentary snacks consisting of a package of Oreos. Take a couple for yourself, then pass the rest around. Oh, wait. I polished them off during the last haul. Don't despair. I might still have some tiny packs of saltines that I flitched from a diner in Anchorage last month. After said snacks, our in-flight entertainment will commence. Through the artful medium of sock puppetry, I will be performing highlights from the popular action picture Die Hard. I gotta say, my favorite part is at the end when I take the sock representing Hans Gruber and toss it out the window.
I used to do a nifty take on Gone with the Wind using interpretive dance, but the constant weight displacement kept sending us into a tailspin. Well, I reckon I about covers it. Just sit back and relax, and thank y'all for flying Plummet Airlines.
Big Girl turned and banged on the cockpit door.
Onward and upward, Ernie.
Craig and Lorna held hands as the rickety rocket from hell lumbered down the runway and toward the heavens. The plane bucked like a bronco, causing some of the trapped passengers to puke in their oxygen bag. An old man lost his false teeth, which clattered up and down the aisle, terrifying a small child who feared the plane was going to eat her. Everyone was astonished and relieved when the bucket of bolts reached cruising altitude. With the plane leveled, Big Girl came out with a wicker basket of stale saltines.
Take a pack of these here crackers and pass them along.
How are we supposed to wash these clothespins down?
Asked a disgruntled flyer.
You're welcome to some of the pee I just filled my underwear with,
answered the old lady behind them. Lorna, now calmer, released Craig's hand.
I think we're safe now. Nothing could be more dangerous than this flying Coke can.
She was, of course, wrong. Once Craig and Lorna arrived in Moose Dick, they grabbed a quick lunch at a quaint diner, then walked a short distance to the Blue Balls Motel.
Hi,
Lorna said to the desk clerk.
We're the Wankamoths from Claxton, Georgia. I reserved a room a couple of days ago.
The desk clerk finger-pecked the PC's keyboard.
Oh yeah, here we go. We have y'all down for the tour package. Say, this might be a bit of a short notice, but if you're up for it, the tour bus is about to take the last trip of the day. You can always wait until the next one's scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, but there isn't much to do here in Moose Dick in the interim. You could squeeze in the tour and check out early. Might save you some cash.
Well now, that's mighty gracious of you, friend. So what you think, Shug? It's always good to save a few pesos.
Sure is. Let's get checked in and get the tour out of the way.
The desk clerk gave them a cordial grin.
As you wish, he said, tapping some more information into the PC. Would you like me to use the credit card number you originally gave me to book the package?
Yep, that'll work.
Wonderful,
the desk clerk replied. He opened the drawer below the desk and removed two key cards, handing them to Craig.
I have you down for room 11. It's around back, so you shouldn't get any road noise.
Mucho gracias. How long before the bus leaves?
Not for another hour. That should give you enough time to get settled.
And where do we catch it?
Right out front. How's that for convenience?
That's great. Let's get moving,
Craig said to Lorna, reaching down to take the luggage. They were about to walk away when the desk clerk spoke up.
Folks, he said hesitantly. I just want to give you a friendly warning. Your guide is a man named Dirk. He can be a little reckless, so don't let him talk you into going beyond the safety zone that the rangers have marked. Other than that, I think you'll be fine. Sorry if I'm scaring you, but I want you to be safe.
Oh, you ain't scaring us,
Craig scoffed.
Scary is being at a Wankamoth get-together after the Dingle Daddies runs out.
Lorna crossed her arms.
If you two gals are done gabbing, I'd like to go to the room. I've had a big one brewing ever since I scarfed down them expired saltines.
Yes'm,
Craig said obediently. Then he and Lorna left for their room. The desk clerk sighed.
Oh, Dirk, please don't do anything stupid. Again.
A little before 3 p.m., Craig and Lorna joined five others in front of the motel who were waiting to take the tour. Though they weren't a large group, they were an eclectic ensemble. An older man and woman were standing together, a married couple perhaps. Judging by their interactions, the mister appeared pleasant, but the missus seemed cocky and austere. A rotund 40-something man was warming himself by jumping up and down and huffing while frosted air escaped his mouth and nostrils like steam. Craig wondered how someone with that much protective blubber could be so cold. He looked like a sperm whale modeling a new line of North Face winter gear. However, Slappy Cha-Cha Jackson and his dolled-up girlfriend, Curvy Boots, most captivated Craig. He had never seen two celebrities up close and personal before. The nearest he had ever come was Clovis, Lorna's slutty sister. She made him think of a low-rent version of Taylor Swift, but instead of a stage, Clovis used a bed. And like the end of Taylor's performances, once the excitement died down and the lights came on, Clovis thanked everyone for coming.
"What you looking at?"
Lorna mumbled to Craig.
"You ever seen one of them Toyo Ho commercials?"
"You mean the stupid ones with that pipsqueak pimp?"
"Yeah, them's the ones. That Slappy standing over there with his favorite girl, Curvy Boots."
Lorna followed Craig's eyes.
"Oh, yeah, that's him all right. He's the last person I would have expected to run into in this here burg."
Craig had to meet him. He just had to.
"Excuse me, sir. Are you Slappy Cha-Cha Jackson from Toyo Ho?"
Slappy turned to Craig, flashing his signature pearly whites.
"Do Korean kids play strings in the school orchestra? Hell yeah!"
"Craig, stop bothering him."
"I ain't no problem, ma'am,"
Slappy said.
"Slap, slap, slap is always hap, hap, happy to meet his fans. Ha, ha. I'm pleased to meet you, Craig. Let me introduce you to my woman, Curvy Boots."
Curvy, well past inebriated, bobbled her head in Craig's general direction.
Hello.
"It's nice to meet you too, Miss Curvy. This here's my wife, Lorna."
Please.
"Yeah, whatever,"
Lorna said dismissively. The other couple stepped forward. The woman spoke first.
"As long as we're traveling together, we may as well introduce ourselves, too. I'm Beulah Mush, and this is my husband, Melvin."
"Well, it's nice to meet you all,"
Melvin said with an easy smile that belied a gentleman's charm. The portly man came next.
"I'm Delroy Conroy from Butte, Montana. Pleased to meet everyone."
Slappy smiled ear to ear.
"Delroy Conroy. I like that name. Easy to remember."
"Yeah, like gonorrhea,"
Lorna said. She was in an unkind mood. It was cold and she was unhappy about it. But then she reminded herself that she had been the one to push for Alaska. Suddenly, a rumbling, sputtering sound drew everyone's attention. A short school bus chugged toward the woebegone passengers, eventually sliding to a stop in front of the motel. The loud whoosh of its air brakes startling everyone. The vehicle was a converted special ed bus with thick iron bars on the windows. Flaky strips of yellow paint curled from its body. Rusty snow chains encircled worn tires. Its name, the Bipolar Express, adorned a side.
"Are you friggin' kidding me?"
Beulah asked.
"The only thing holding that piece of crap together is the paint, and it's peeling away faster than a purple-haired tranny who parked his Prius too close to a biker rally."
Easy, honey," Melvin said in a reassuring tone. "I'm sure the driver keeps his bus in tip-top condition. It's just seen better days, that's all."
The door of the bus swung open, and a disheveled man stepped out. He wore a stained Carhartt jacket, paint-splattered pants, and a frazzled baseball cap embroidered with the phrase, "I rode the Bipolar Express and all I got was tetanus." He cleared his throat, dislodging a glob of phlegm, and swallowed it.
"Hello, one and all, and welcome to my mighty ship, the Bipolar Express. I'm your captain, Dirk, and I'll be your fearless guide as we embark on an exciting journey through the Arctic wilderness. I've got some free ball caps and t-shirts on board, along with the medical kits I promised you. I hope we don't need them,
but you never know what kind of dangers await you on this foray into the wilds of this barren realm. So then climb aboard, grab your merch, and have a seat. Be sure to brace yourselves, because this is about to get interesting.
That's what they told me before my pap smear,
Beulah grumbled. One by one, the group filed into the bus, retrieved their promotional items from a cardboard box resting on the floor, and claimed a seat. After a few minutes, Dirk stepped on board and eased behind the steering wheel. Then he reached over, grabbed a small metal bar, and swung the door shut.
Okay, fearless travelers, here we go.
He took off the brake, threw the bus into gear, and pulled away from the motel. Delroy touched the bars on the window next to him, a curious look on his chubby face.
So, Dirk, are these here bars on the windows to keep the wildlife out?
Nope. They're there to keep the passengers from escaping and skipping out on my tip.
The others ignored the daft exchange and prepared themselves for a long and bumpy journey into an untamed region. However, the excursion only lasted a few minutes before they reached the first destination, a single-wide trailer. Dirk pulled up to the front, tapped the horn, and a person in a ratty, sweat-stained polar bear costume staggered out.
Ooh, better look out, folks,
Dirk muttered in a scary voice. It was clear to the brighter spectators that it had to be a fake bear, because it had a lit cigarette in one of its paws and a tumbler of liquor in the other. A few of the dimmer riders, Slappy, Kirby, and Delroy, pressed themselves against the bus windows.
Come here, Mr. Bear,
Delroy said, coaxing it over for a better look. The man bear ambled to Delroy's window and let loose an earth-rumbling belch. Then, in a weak attempt to add authenticity, he growled at everyone, though it sounded more like a raspy smoker fighting for his next breath.
I hope it don't attack us or tip the bus over,
Slappy muttered.
That's not a bear, you drooling jackass,
Beulah said.
Of course it is,
Slappy argued.
Listen more closely. He's growling and everything.
Yeah, right. All polar bears reek of Marlboros and Johnny Walker Red,
Beulah replied.
I want my money back, Melvin yelled. I'm pretty sure very few polar bears have zippers down the front.
I agree with... like he said,
Kirby stammered. Finally, in a desperate effort to save face and the cost of giving out refunds, Dirk addressed the wary passengers.
Settle down, everyone. I'm going to prove to you that this is a real live polar bear.
He opened the door, then addressed the group.
Now, everybody please remain on the bus. We don't want anyone to get mauled,
he warned with an almost believable concern for everyone's well-being.
That stupid bear couldn't maul his way out of a dry cleaning bag,
howled Beulah. After leaving the bus, Dirk took his time as he cautiously eased within 6 feet of the dopey bear.
Hey there, big fella. These folks don't think you're for real. It's tough being a polar bear out here on the lonesome tundra, especially if you don't get paid.
At first, the polar bear didn't move, as if it were sizing up its opponent. Then he slowly staggered to Dirk and mumbled,
like hell I won't,
and promptly kicked Dirk between his legs. iPhone cameras clicked wildly as Dirk dropped to his knees and puked up his lunch. Although polar bears don't have fingers, this one had enough of a middle one to lift Dirk's face before stomping back inside the trailer, slamming the door behind it. The amused passengers clambered off the bus and took selfies standing over a pale and embarrassed Dirk. Then, after giving poor Dirk a moment or two to recover, they insisted he take them on the long and arduous journey back to civilization, the one that entailed him backing up the bus and driving the 50-some-odd yards to the loading zone.
Is that all there is to the... The tour,
Kirby stammered.
Afraid so, girlfriend. Let's get back, call a cab, and return to Juno. We'll put together our own safari deep in the bush. Shit.
Ooh, you so nasty.
As each of the disgruntled passengers filed past Dirk and onto the bus, he stared sadly after them.
Oh, come on. Not even a couple of bucks for a beer?
Predictably, there were no tips for Dirk, save for the verbal one he got from Beulah, in which she told him where he could park his stupid bus. Once Dirk's queasiness subsided, he boarded the bus and addressed his guests.
Look, folks, I know I let you down, but if you'd like, I could take you on a true adventure. There's some amazing wildlife in parts of the forest. However, there's also been some serious stuff going on up there for years. They've discovered countless animals and people dead and devoured. By what or by who? No one knows. That or no one will say. The townies think it's the work of the creature called the White Devil. The word is, as long as you leave by dark, you'll be 100% safe.
Lorna spoke up.
The motel clerk told us we shouldn't let you take us past something called the safety zone.
What's she talking about, Dirk? What safety zone? Asked Delroy.
Dirk waited before answering. He knew of the danger, but he also knew of a cheap landlord who would evict him if he didn't pay his back rent.
The park rangers established a safety zone to protect hunters and campers. Like I said, there's a lot of natural beauty. However, to see it, we're going to have to cross the safety zone. Look, if I thought we were in real danger of being hurt or worse, I wouldn't go there. We'll drive through a narrow path up to a place called Winter's Peak, then turn around. I'll have us back before nightfall. Would that suit you?
How come you didn't say anything about this before? Asked Beulah. What's changed?
The truth is, I need this money to keep a roof over my head. If this is what it takes to make y'all happy, I'm willing to do it. I was hesitant to bring the place up earlier because if things go south, they'll shut me down for good. But I'm confident that if we keep to the main trail and get back before dark, we'll have an awesome time. Tell you what, raise your hand if you want to continue. Majority rules.
Slowly, one hand after another rose.
Okay, then. Don't say I didn't give you an out.
The crush of snow beneath the powerful feet of the creature echoed through the desolate forest. Its lonely, ominous sound like a death march. The birds, with their musical cooings, had long since evacuated the trees, leaving only an eerie quiet. Most of the other denizens of the wild, wolves, bears, and rabbits, laid eviscerated, their bones spread out over the land like pale markers. The ravaged, undiscovered corpses of the men who had tracked the mysterious beast joined them in the icy cemetery, resting beneath an eternal blanket of snow. The dead had become many, and now sustenance was scarce. Lurking near the line where civilization met the wilds, the creature stopped and listened. A low hum was winding through the white world of the ravenous beast. Its acute hearing allowed the distant sounds to touch its short but sensitive ears like a bat's echolocation system. Movement meant nourishment. Obtaining nourishment required cunning. The apex predator enjoyed the game of tracking and killing, something that challenged its skills and assuaged its stomach's yearnings. The hammering hearts, desperate pants, and horrified screams of its captured quarries brought it sublime joy. The ripping and consumption of the delicious flesh and muscle from the target's crushed bones was its reward. The wet warmth of their spurting blood inside its massive jaws, washing down the remains, completed the gory victory. the creature of lore would again have to reveal itself to the outside world, something that went against its solitary nature. But it did not fear. Something in the wind was alerting it that soon, fresh meat would be plentiful. The bus headed east for 5 miles until it came to a rise. 100 yards in, the gravel trail became a slippery slope of snow and ice. The tire chains were becoming less useful as the bus churned uphill. Another 100 yards up, the snow deepened, and the ice was more treacherous. Not long after, the bus came to an unexpected halt. Stranded between civilization and the unknown, the riders faced their worst nightmare. Their worries would have been compounded had they known that somewhere in the distance, a merciless killing machine was already moving in on them. The wheels on the bus went round and round, and the rest of it had given up. Nevertheless, Dirk kept the pedal to the floor, hoping that a part of one wheel might find purchase.
"Stop it before you dig us in deeper,"
Beulah shouted at Dirk. The others had already resigned themselves to being trapped, no matter how much the chains gnawed their way into the frozen mush. Dirk killed the engine, then turned to face his passengers. His glum expression said it all.
"Okay, folks, here's our situation. We're stuck in at least a foot of snow. Despite the chains, we aren't gaining traction. We've got maybe a couple of hours of daylight before it's unsafe. That might not be enough time for someone to walk back, get help, and return."
"What you talking about? We got our cell phones. We can use them, can't we?"
"There's no cell signal this far up the hill."
"So what do we do?"
Delroy asked, a tremor in his voice.
"We may have to wait it out. If we're not back by nightfall, folks will figure we hit some trouble, and they'll send someone up here," Dirk explained.
Only Melvin understood the awful truth.
"I don't think anyone's coming anytime soon."
"Well, why do you say that?"
Craig asked.
"I think about it. We're in an area we weren't supposed to be in. Dirk has already explained that after dark, the danger increases. Well, I wouldn't come up here at night, would you?"
"No.
It'll be the morning before anyone comes within a mile of this point. And that's assuming they think we're stuck up here. It could be quite a while before they send anyone to investigate. I hate to say it, but somebody needs to go back and alert the authorities to our situation."
Dirk realized with great despair that Melvin was right. He slumped in the driver's seat.
"Oh, Captain, my Captain,"
Beulah called sarcastically to Dirk.
"You're the brave leader of this expedition. You should be the one who gets help."
Slappy agreed.
"Yeah, man. There's still enough life for you to make it out of here. I, for one, am not willing to stay here all night waiting for Jason or the Predator to break in and murder all of us. And by all of us, I mean me."
"Young man, I know you're scared. We all are," Melvin said to Dirk. "But you know the way back, maybe even a shortcut or two. It might be best for you to get as quick a start as possible. Otherwise..."
"Otherwise we all might die,"
Delroy finished. Dirk was frightened. He knew of the awful sights that the authorities and hunters had discovered. He believed that something bigger than a bear and meaner than a man had been responsible for the brutal killings. He realized, to his shame, that he was the last person that anyone should depend on to save the day. Yet here he was, the only one who had the slightest chance of making it to town for help. "Crap, dude," he thought. "For once in your miserable life, be of use to someone." He spoke up before he changed his mind.
"Okay, everyone, I'll head back to town. There's about a quarter of a tank of gas left. It'll probably be morning when I return with help, so use it wisely to keep the bus heated."
Unless you have to relieve yourself, stay put. This is a steel bus with reinforced bars on the windows. I can't imagine anything making its way in, no matter how big and bad. Melvin felt remorseful. You know what, Dirk? Maybe we should all stick together for the night. If you got hurt going for help, I don't think I'd ever be able to forgive myself. Melvin's kind words warmed Dirk. Thanks, Melvin. But the sooner I get going, the better off we all are. Why don't you come up and close the door behind me? Melvin swallowed. His concern for Dirk was genuine. Okay, I'll do it. He rose and walked to the front of the short bus. I'm ready when you are, son. Dirk watched his own hand open the doors, but he felt disconnected from himself, as if an outside force was controlling his movements. Feeling jittery, he took a couple of reassuring breaths. You got this. Just keep one foot in front of the other, he encouraged himself. He peered into Melvin's face, hoping the thoughtful man might attempt to talk him out of his fool's errand again. Melvin noticed the dread in Dirk's darting eyes, sensed his terror. He rested his hand on Dirk's trembling shoulder. You can do this, son. Now run and don't look back. Without a word, Dirk stepped from the bus and into the chilly wind. Melvin closed the doors and returned to his seat. No one said anything. It might have been an acceptance of their dire situation or the weight of impending guilt over Dirk's potential demise that brought about the uneasy silence.
He'll be fine. I'm sure of it,
Beulah assured the others. Lorna chimed in.
Why don't we take our minds off all this by getting to know each other better?
She surveyed everyone before settling on Curvy Boots.
So, Curvy Boots can't be your real name. What is it exactly?
Fuchsia May Fudge Pucker.
Curvy Boots it is.
Craig was eager to learn about Slappy's journey to exotic pimpdom.
Slappy, how'd you get into your current vocation?
Slappy had the haunted look of someone who never wanted to revisit his past. However, in this moment of danger, he figured it was as good a time as any to bare his soul.
Now here's what happened, Craig. I used to be a man of the cloth. That cloth had a creamy velvet texture, but it was cloth just the same. I was officiating a wedding for this sweet young couple. I could tell by the way they looked at one another that the union held the promise of love for years to come. After a few words from yours truly, they went on to an ornate table with a large white unity candle on top. As they was exchanging their sacred vows, the bride was unexpectedly visited by the ghost of Chili Dog's past. Shit, at first we all thought the organist had hit the wrong note until the unity candle went whoosh, and the front of the chapel got lit up like Miley Cyrus on New Year's. Quick as a flash, the seat of the bride's gown caught fire and the whole place started stinking of melted chiffon and barbecue butt crack. We all built out the damn church like Popeyes was handing out free buckets of chicken. I ain't heard that much screaming since the time I crossed my legs and squashed my nuts. Somebody ran for a fire extinguisher. By the time he returned, the fire couldn't be contained. I stood there crying in the parking lot, watching the church burn to ashes, while the groom beat out his bride's flaming ass with a hymnal. In that dire moment, I began questioning God's faithfulness. How could a loving God allow such a travesty? Not long after that, I quit the clergy and started up my own business venture. Now here I am. Shit.
Slappy looked around the bus until he settled on Delroy.
How's about you, Delroy? What's your story? Gee, I don't know. It's a little embarrassing, Delroy said.
More than having your tail set on fire?
Lorna asked.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. As you have all noticed, I'm alone on this trip. It's not because I'm a confirmed bachelor. I just can't keep a wife. Seriously, I've been married 4 times over 12 years. I go through wives the way the Giants go through head coaches. One of my buddies told me he uses my wedding invitations as reminders that it's time to check the batteries in his smoke detectors. I haven't come out of these relationships with anything more than a few bucks, the older of the two vehicles, and a dog who hates me. I thought that this excursion might get me out of my head for a bit. Well, it might be working, because all I can think about is what might be waiting to kill me tonight.
That sure is rough, brother, Craig said. Me and the missus didn't know if we was going to make it. Neither did anyone else. Instead of visiting the bridal registry, they placed bets on FanDuel.
Yet here you are, Melvin said in a gentle tone.
What brought you two on the trip? That is, other than the rusty pickup with a gun rack and a don't tread on me bumper sticker,
Beulah asked. Craig answered.
We decided that we hadn't gotten away in a while. We've been through some weird stuff, let me tell you. Horrifying stuff. And now it seems like we've found ourselves in another odd predicament. I just hope that old Dirk can get down the mountain safely. I don't think that me and Lorna have the will or the strength to battle anything else dangerous.
Oh, I wouldn't worry, Melvin said with his typical positivity. Well, I'm certain Dirk will get us out of this. Just you wait and see. My word. How far is it still? Dirk said to no one in particular. He had been walking for over 2 hours, and night was now upon him, darkening the path. Snow was falling at a quick clip, and the wind had picked up. He paused to catch his breath and let his aching legs recover. His heart skipped when he heard something rustling in the forest. The harried driver's adrenaline took over, flooding his nervous system and heightening his awareness that something awful was about to happen. He felt like a feral animal sensing its imminent doom. He waited, attempting to control his heavy breathing, hoping that whatever was tracking him would lose him in the howling wind. Out of nowhere, something big and heavy slammed into him from behind, knocking him 6 feet away. He turned on his back and began paddling away from the enormous form. As the thing stepped into the moonlight, Dirk screamed from his soul. He watched helplessly, hopelessly, as the awful beast pulled him towards its terrible maw. When his legs entered the thing's stretching mouth, he found his voice as he squealed in agony. More high-pitched whoops escaped his lips as the huge paws drew him further inside, up to his waist. By the time he had been chewed to his chest, he wasn't screaming anymore. Dirk had been gone for a few hours. The natives were getting restless. A small voice pierced the muted space with an urgent request.
Hi, baby. Mama needs to make it rain, Kirby said.
Yeah, you might want to hold on to that for a bit,
Slappy replied.
But Daddy's little squaw's about the pee-pee in her teepee.
Okay, but be as quiet as you can. There's some trees on the side of the path. Go there and get on back. Dig?
I dig. Dig. I understand.
She wobbled her way to the front of the bus and opened the doors.
You be careful out there,
Lorna said.
You betcha,
she slurred. As soon as Kirby stepped off the bus, Lorna closed the door behind her.
I hope she'll be all right, Delroy said. She's street tough,
Slappy assured him.
She can handle herself.
Kirby trudged through the mountain snow until she came to a crop of trees. She pulled her pants and zebra stripe undies to her ankles and squatted.
She was about a pint into her efforts when an immense muscular arm wrapped around her waist. Razor-sharp claws punctured her skin and hooked her by the ribs, snatching her backwards with a loud, wet crack. Kirby neither had the time nor the breath to scream. After several minutes, the remaining group began worrying.
"Shouldn't she be back by now?"
Craig asked apprehensively.
"She had a whole lot of fire water before we came out. That stuff got to go someplace. Maybe one of us should go and find her,"
Delroy said. All heads turned in Slappy's direction.
"Oh, come on, y'all. She might have had to drop a deuce. Nothing's been confirmed yet. Give the girl a chance."
Lorna glared at Slappy.
"That woman is your responsibility, Superfly. You need to go and find her."
Slappy melted in the heat of the other passenger's stares.
"All right, all right. I'll make sure she's okay."
Screwing up his courage, he left the safety of the bus. Following Kirby's tracks, Slappy came to a spot behind the trees he'd pointed out to her. His eyes broadened when he gazed at the sight before him. The yellowed snow joined a crimson puddle to form a pool of gore. Strips of flesh littered the area, along with two tarantula-like eyelashes, a few long nail tips, and a gold wig.
"Oh, Lord!"
Slappy hollered, his desperate voice making its way back to the bus. Craig leapt from his seat and went to a portside window, pulling the stained glass down.
"Slappy! Is everything okay?"
"Oh, Lord!"
Slappy barreled through the snow as if his wig was on fire and there was water waiting. He rounded the front of the vehicle and banged on the door.
"Let me in! Let me in! Something done ate my hope!"
Craig flung open the doors and Slappy ran inside. Closing the doors behind him, Craig yelled,
"What happened? Where's Kirby Boots?"
Slappy was bent over, hyperventilating.
"She gone. Kirby be gone."
"How do you know?"
Lorna asked.
"There ain't nothing left but some fierce blood and damn near $800 worth of faux beauty. Trust me, she's gone. She's gone."
"Should we search for her?"
Delroy asked.
"No,"
Lorna yelled.
"Whatever the folks around here have been worried about is out there. We need to stay here and keep quiet."
Craig noticed everyone's breath pluming.
"Babe, we gotta crank the engine and turn on some heat, or we won't survive the night."
"He's right,"
Delroy said.
"We have to keep ourselves alive until daybreak."
Lorna thought about it.
"You're right. Craig, crank the engine and turn the heat on stomp."
"You got it, Shug,"
Craig said, turning the key in the ignition. Everyone was relieved when the engine turned. Soon the warmth would flow. Minutes went by before anyone spoke. Delroy broke the stillness with the question that was on everyone's mind.
"Do you think that Dirk is dead?"
Only Lorna was brave enough to answer.
"He might well be. Hopefully Dirk was right when he said that folks in town would get suspicious if we don't show up. We just gotta stay alive till somebody comes."
There was quiet until Delroy broke through again with another concern.
"I gotta go potty too. Either I can do it in here or I can venture outside. If it's all the same to you guys, I'd rather go in the back."
Slappy was the first to voice his opinion.
"Oh, hell no. Ain't no way I'm gonna sniff your Snickers all night. No, you got to take your business outdoors. But I might be killed."
"Then hold it,"
Lorna said.
"Please, guys, it's starting to get pointy,"
Delroy pleaded. Craig's humanity lessened.
"They're right, Delroy. You got a dookie outside. Do it on the side of the bus. If you hear anything approaching, run back inside. I'll leave the door open for you."
Delroy felt conflicted. He didn't want to risk going outside, but nature wasn't calling. She was wailing at the top of her lungs.
"Okay, but keep those doors open."
"I give you my word."
Delroy braced himself and headed for the door that separated life from death.
Okay, here I go.
Delroy jumped off the bus and settled in beside it, dropping his trousers. He grunted and pushed, taxing his bowels. After decorating the snow for a few seconds, he heard something creeping through the brush toward him. He clipped his poo, yanked his clothing back into place, then ran back to the bus.
Shut the doors! Shut them now!
Craig yanked the bar that controlled the doors, and they closed with a swish.
Did you get it all out?
Slappy asked. Delroy waited until he had control of himself before answering.
Yeah, I took care of business.
So that thing was near?
It was almost on me. Do you think it's capable of getting on this bus?
Slappy asked.
Only one way to find out. Let's hunker down and be quiet. Maybe it'll leave us alone.
Everyone scrunched in front of their seats, saying nothing. Minutes passed without incident. Something heavy landed on the roof of the bus.
Ah, lordy! Something's on the roof, and it sure ain't Santa Claus!
Everyone be calm,
Lorna instructed.
It's just trying to stir up some noise to see how many of us there is.
Voices hushed, breaths bated, and pulses pounded like tribal war drums. Silence. More silence. Terrible silence. Everyone looked up and saw two sets of black nails tearing through the thinnest part of the bus, as if they were slicing through paper.
Sweet Lord in heaven, we're done for!
Delroy yelled. A terrible thought came to Craig. He winced in fear, but knew it was the only way.
Let's get off the bus! Everybody run in a different direction! It can't get all of us!
He right!
Slappy yelled, running to the front of the bus and opening the doors. The frightened pimp took off with the others in hot pursuit. Chubby Delroy was in the rear. As everyone else scattered toward the forest, Delroy stood frozen at the bus's exit, afraid to run, afraid to stay behind alone. Before he could decide, the lurking beast leaned down from the roof, its oversized mouth swallowing Delroy's head and ripping it free in one quick twist of spinning fangs. Delroy's headless corpse remained on its feet, as if it didn't realize it was dead. Finally, the bloodless body fell forward, crashing into the snow. The eyeless monster leapt from the top of the bus, landing near Delroy's body. It sniffed around until it detected the coppery scent of his pooling blood. Once it located its prey, the white devil wasted little time ripping it into bite-sized chunks, which it devoured with ferocious fury. Slappy watched in horror from his hiding place just inside the forest.
Dang, that's some fiendish crap.
Although repulsed, he couldn't take his eyes off the carnivorous killer. In his imagination, he pictured it looking like a large, deformed man. But this was altogether different. Its white, furry body resembled a child's distorted drawing of an enormous, muscular lion. It had the ability to walk on all fours or on its back legs. Its head resembled a human's, but much larger. Its ears were small stubs that protruded from the sides of its skull. Its nose comprised two long slits on its forehead. A colossal mouth balanced its missing eyes with dislocating jaws, allowing it to consume a large quarry. Its inner mouth had a ring of terrible teeth that revolved rather than working up and down. It reminded Slappy of a garbage disposal. He took notice of how the thing had to locate Delroy's body through smell, as it had no sight. As for the white devil's hearing abilities, Slappy thought that perhaps he was far enough away to make a break and join the others without being heard. Fortunately, he had seen where the others had entered the forest, about 20 yards to his left. His muscles tensed as he prepared to run.
All right, Big Slappy,
he thought.
Let's run like the wind.
He jogged through the trees toward his companions, doing his best to keep the noise to a minimum. Meanwhile, the other four were hiding together in a dense thicket. They had been too far away to witness Delroy's death or Slappy's escape, so they didn't know if they were the only survivors.
"Do you think Slappy and Delroy got away?" Melvin whispered.
"I haven't heard any screaming yet, but you never know," Beulah said.
Lorna was shaken from the cold and her jangled nerves. Craig, upon seeing her, wrapped her in his arms, occasionally rubbing her back with his gloved hands to aid her circulation. He was about to ask the group if they should keep going when he heard something panting and drawing nearer.
"Y'all hear that? It might be on to us. We need to get."
A collective squeal arose as the form charged through the thicket. Relief passed through them when Slappy appeared.
"Slappy, you wig-wearing moron! You about give me a heart attack,"
Lorna said, holding her hand to her heaving chest, her overburdened lungs burning from the unbearable cold.
"Sorry, y'all. I didn't want to stay alone out there."
"Alone? Where's Delroy?"
Melvin asked. Slappy's silence and dourness answered the question.
"Did he suffer much?"
Craig asked delicately.
"Shit. Y'all ever seen a hog get slaughtered? How about one of them nature documentaries where a lion rips apart a gazelle? Shit. Picture, if you will, running over a squirrel with a lawnmower. Or when a..."
Shut up!
The rest shouted in unison.
"Shh,"
Slappy whispered.
"That creature has a keen sense of smell. For all we know, it could be on its way here right now. It's a sneaky old thing. It can attack you before you..."
All of a sudden, Slappy plopped forward in the snow. His buggy eyes and terrified expression were the final things the others saw as something yanked him backwards behind the bush. The group was stuck to the ground as Slappy's screams erupted and thrashing ensued. Soon, the wood was still again. After a moment, there was a wet sound like a dog yakking up a bone. Slappy's wig sailed through the icy air and landed on top of Beulah's head like a curly hat, eliciting an ear-splitting wail. Craig took charge.
"Slappy was skinny, so he might have been the hors d'oeuvre. It's us who's going to be the main course. Anybody who don't want to get it better, haul ass now."
"Come on, Beulah!"
Melvin yelled, grabbing his wife's hand and dragging her at a quick clip further into the forest. Craig and Lorna were running as if they were attempting to set a new land speed record. Craig, the faster of the two, was a few yards in front of Lorna.
"Craig, you better not leave me back here. I'll be danged if I'm going to let that thing use one of my legs to pick the rest of me out of its teeth."
Craig stopped in his tracks, causing Lorna to slam into his back.
"Well, thank you, Prince Charming, for slowing down enough for your poor fat wife to catch up."
"Shush," Craig whispered.
"You hear that?"
Lorna listened but heard nothing.
"No, I don't hear a thing."
"That's either really good or really bad,"
Craig muttered.
"Let's walk on the sunny side of the street and assume we've lost it. There's a tree over there we can climb. I think we might be able to get up there. If nothing else, it'll give us a bird's eye view of the area."
"I never really thought I'd say this, but you might have had a good idea,"
Lorna said.
"All right then, let's get up that tree, but we gotta do it quick and quiet."
Lorna nodded she understood. Then the two of them crept to and up the tree, going up several feet. From their well-hidden perch, they searched the area for movement and sound, but detected neither. A troubling thought came to Craig. Had Beulah and Melvin found a similar haven for themselves? As stealthy and fast as the beast was, he had no way of knowing if it had attacked the older couple. Craig took comfort from his and Lorna's safety, temporary though it might be. Meanwhile, the white devil had picked up a scent. It was the pungent odor of fear, flesh, and a tattered afro wig.
"I'm freezing to death out here,"
Beulah complained. The relentless chattering of her teeth caused a numb ache in her jaw and face. For the briefest of moments, she considered putting the wig lying at her feet back on her head. Melvin was sympathetic.
"I know, sweetheart, but it's best to stay hidden and quiet until we can determine if it's safe to move."
Beulah's frustration reared its ugly head.
"And how are we supposed to do that? We can't stay out in these conditions indefinitely."
Melvin became distracted, much to his angry wife's chagrin.
"I'm sorry, Melvin. Am I boring you with my discomfort?"
"It isn't that. I'm wondering how Craig and Lorna are making now. I sure hope they're okay."
"Why are you more focused on them than on us too? My goodness, those Peckerwoods eat those kinds of things back in Redneck Land."
"Look, honey, I know you're cold and frightened, but that doesn't mean you can't demonstrate a little empathy. Lots of good people died horrifically tonight. For all we know, we could be next."
"I'm not frightened," Beulah huffed. "I'm pissed off about our current circumstances. And if I don't get warm soon, I might just let that monster put me out of my misery."
Then to prove her point, she picked up Slappy's wig and covered her freezing head. Suddenly, they heard far-off footsteps. Melvin and Beulah stood statue still.
"What do we do now, Mr. Care Bear?"
Beulah whispered indignantly.
"Don't make a sound or move a muscle."
The crunching of heavy footfalls became louder. Melvin looked into Beulah's eyes and saw something there he had never seen before. Fear. There was also a sound he had never heard coming from her before. Silence. The heavy tread of the white devil ceased when it was within sniffing distance. Melvin's heart began cracking as he realized that this might be the last time he'd see his beloved partner of 42 years again. He reached out and took her hand in his own. He smiled the way he had when he first laid eyes on the sassy college cheerleader who loved playing hard to get. His lips silently formed the words, "I love you." Beulah, however, didn't think their marriage had aged well. The golden days of smoldering love letters and passionate kisses were well behind her now. All she needed at this point was a new Lexus Sport Coupe and a credit card with a $10,000 limit. Melvin had known for some time that Beulah didn't love him anymore, and it hurt. But he figured that his love for her was enough to keep them going. Turns out it wasn't.
"Love, huh?"
she sneered.
"Right now, I'd trade you for a hot shower and a ham on rye."
She was so far into her heartless diatribe that she didn't notice Melvin looking over her head at the drooling grotesquerie towering behind her.
"Am I talking too loud, Melvin? Why shouldn't I? It isn't like you've got the stones to protect me. In fact, I'm going to talk louder. Then when that creature comes, I'll let it have you."
"Beulah, you need to listen to me carefully."
"Don't tell me what to—"
Melvin couldn't be sure because it happened so fast, but he could have sworn that Beulah's head was still ranting after it flew off and landed in a nearby snowdrift. Her lifeless head, still wearing the wig, was a bizarre and terrifying sight. The white devil roared as it glared at Melvin, its dead eyes a searing red. Frigid tears rolled down Melvin's face, his heartbreak displacing his fear.
"Go ahead. Kill me too," he muttered.
Instead, the monster turned, then went to Beulah's head and batted it around. To Melvin, it looked like someone picking out a cabbage. The beast pulled the pallid head from the snow, examining it carefully. It flicked the nasty afro aside and opened its mighty jaws. Melvin nearly threw up when it popped Beulah's head into its mouth like a tic-tac and began chewing. The nauseating sound of cracking bone was bad enough, but the blood spurting out of the crushed skull was the last straw for Melvin. He used the monster's inattention to cautiously back away until he was at a safe distance. He turned and took a step forward, only to fall from a cliff hidden by the snow. He plummeted several feet until his body pounded the ground below. The impact wasn't enough to kill him, but it was sufficient to knock him unconscious. Melvin lay still in blessed sleep while the white devil finished its snack and left.
Melvin! Melvin, wake up! Wake up!
Craig shook the shoulder of the sleeping man, hoping to rouse him before the creature found them again. So far, he was having no luck.
Oh, for pity's sake, get out of the way and let me have a go,
Lorna grumbled, shoving Craig aside. She knelt beside Melvin and pushed her thumb and index finger to the edge of one of his nostrils.
We did this to my bitch granny when we wanted to make sure she was dead.
Pinching some nose hairs, Lorna yanked them free.
Ayo!
Melvin screeched and sprang to life.
What's happening?
Then, thinking of poor Beulah, began crying. Lorna rubbed his shoulder.
Melvin, honey, where's Beulah? Is she...
dead. My precious wife is dead,
Melvin croaked, his voice thick with grief. Craig and Lorna exchanged looks. Though they both felt great sympathy for the grieving man, they were happy that each of them still had each other. They waited until Melvin composed himself.
I'm so very sorry, brother,
Craig whispered, conveying his sympathy for the man he had come to like.
Is there anything we can do for you now?
Melvin sat wordlessly and stared into the distance, as if the answer were lurking there. Slowly, a grin grew across his face. It wasn't one of his easygoing smiles. This one was sinister. Craig and Lorna grew concerned. Lorna spoke first.
Melvin, babe, what are you thinking about? You ain't thinking of doing nothing crazy, are you? It might get us all killed for sure.
Maybe, but maybe not, Melvin muttered. Do either of you two remember one of the last things Dirk said?
Pardon me, I had tacos for lunch.
No, Craig, Melvin groaned. I'm talking about how he assured us the bus was safe against attacks. Do you remember now?
Craig nodded.
Oh, yeah. He said the metal in the bars and the bus would keep us safe.
Very good, Craig. You aren't stupid as Lorna warned us you are.
Craig felt mortified.
What? Woman? Why'd you going?
Lorna slapped Craig on the back of his head.
Shut up, you dim-witted ape. Can't you see that Melvin's making a point? Sorry, Melvin. You are now cleared for takeoff.
Thank you, Lorna. You were also right about how much of a whiny baby Craig is.
Dadgummit, woman! You better stop saying them things about me. You can be so hurtful. Can't you see I'm but a frightened child who's drowning in a wading pool of emotion? I feel like... Oh, my Lord. I am a whiny baby. Will you hold me for a minute?
Craig's emotional outburst made Melvin uncomfortable.
Look, if you guys need a minute to yourselves...
That's okay, Melvin,
Lorna said.
Just do what his mama did after he was born. Ignore his whine until he shuts up and dies.
Thank God for Mr. Father,
Craig whimpered.
If he hadn't breastfed me, I would have starved to death.
Melvin and Lorna shared a sickened look. Lorna restarted Melvin's idea.
What you got in mind?
That bus is more than a bus. It's a cage. I think we might be able to lure the creature inside, lock it in, then set the whole shebang on fire.
Oh, it won't be able to get out.
That's right, Melvin said, winking at Craig. We can get rid of that terrible thing once and for all.
As usual, Lorna, the contrarian, found something negative to say about the one thing that made others happy. It was as if she were an antidote for joy.
And how are we supposed to get that thing in the bus? Holler here, kitty kitty?
Yeah,
Craig added.
We'll need bait.
Yes, we will. And that's where I come in, Melvin said. Lorna was concerned.
I know you ain't talking about what I think you're talking about.
Melvin didn't want to waste time defending his decision, so he advanced the plan instead. Craig, do you happen to have a knife? The question offended Craig.
Well, duh. Any self-respecting redneck always carries a knife.
That's good. Here's what we're gonna do. We're going to make our way back to the bus carefully. When we get there, I'm going to look for a flare. Tour guides, particularly in this dodgy terrain, are required to keep some as a part of their emergency kit. You'll take the flare, then use your knife to poke some holes in the gas tank. Once you get a trail going, you and Lorna hide nearby.
I don't like where you're going with this, Melvin,
Lorna said. Melvin pressed on. I'll make as much noise as possible. When I hear it coming, I'll hide under a bench near the front. Hopefully it won't be able to smell me. Even if it does, I think this old man can move fast enough to get that door closed. I'll blow the horn to let you know it's time for you to light the gas trail. Then voila, Alaska is a whole lot safer. The plan troubled Craig.
That sounds like a right smart plan there, Melvin. Still, I ain't totally at peace with you being the one who...
Melvin held his palm in front of Craig's sad face. Stop you right there, my friend. If I can't have my beautiful wife with me in this world, then I'll have her with me in the next. You would be doing me a kindness. Everyone grew quiet. It was as though they each were waiting for the other to fire the starter's pistol. Finally, Melvin, the leader that he was, stepped up.
We need to get going, guys. If we don't act now, the beast will. Then this idea was all for nothing.
Craig and Lorna looked at Melvin, each nodding their approval. Melvin slapped his knee.
All right, team. Let's go cook some monster meat.
It took longer to get to the bus than they planned, but caution made it worth the wait. While Melvin looked around for Dirk's emergency kit, Lorna watched Craig punch several holes in the bus's gas tank with his trusted pocket knife.
Take care not to poke too many holes, Craig. We need more gas in the tank than we do on the ground.
You got it, Sarge. I think we're ready to rock. I'll go check on Melvin. You wait here.
Lorna was cross.
I ain't waiting around by myself, you dingle daddy's dumbass.
Fine then, come on.
They entered the bus just as Melvin was removing a flare from the metal box.
Ta-da!
He chirped, displaying the prized object, as if it were a rare archaeological artifact.
We now have fire, my friends. Are we ready with the fuse?
Yeah, I guess we are,
Craig said solemnly. Lorna looked downward, her head heavy with melancholy. Melvin's heart broke for the two. His pain would soon be over, replaced with a bright new joy. But the guilt they would carry, well, it might be a lot.
Okay, guys. I mean Lorna and Craig. If we aren't careful, this cockamamie plan might actually work. Don't worry about me. I'm at peace with this.
When you see Beulah again, would you tell her how much I hate her stinking guts?
Melvin chuckled.
Of course, Lorna.
Lorna wasn't done.
And while you're at it, could you please impress upon her how much I'd like to slap her unconscious?
Melvin's mood darkened.
Look, Lorna, I know that she could be.
And that I'd like to put my boot up her haughty ass so far that she'll...
For God's sake, Lorna, enough! Melvin yelled.
Once he calmed, he delivered his last instruction before handing Craig the flare.
This is it, gang. Go take your positions and wait for my signal. Now get out of here, you two.
Craig stepped off the bus, followed closely by Lorna. Suddenly, Lorna turned to Melvin, thick tears brimming in her eyes. She embraced him, burying her face in his jacket.
Can I say one last thing to you, my darling friend?
Melvin lovingly patted Lorna's back. Of course, my angel. Lorna pulled her face from Melvin's jacket and peered bravely into his eyes.
Would you also tell that leather-lunged old biddy that I...
Lorna, please. Now I really want to go boom.
All right, all right.
Lorna groused, then went to catch up with Craig, who had taken his place behind some thick bushes.
Are you ready to do this?
Craig asked, fumbling with the flare in his hand.
It's what he wants.
Well, okay then.
Figuring that Craig and Lorna had squirreled themselves away, Melvin pressed down on the bus's horn. Soon the thundering sound of something immense streaking in his direction rewarded him. He squeezed under the bench behind the driver's seat and waited. He surprised himself with how calm and lucid he felt. He closed his eyes and waited. His thoughts went to the first dance he had had with Beulah many years prior. He recalled her face perfectly, her lovely smile surrounded by the red lipstick that made her soft, welcoming kisses all the sweeter, the way he was mesmerized by her dark green eyes. He felt the warmth of her slender body radiating from her and into him. Now, he thought, I'm ready to die. He barely finished the thought when the bus rocked violently. Melvin smelled the thing's fetidness, felt its madness. Fortunately for Melvin, the beast was in such a hurry to eviscerate its victim that it stepped past him and toward the back of the short bus. Melvin knew an opportunity when it came along. In one quick, fluid movement, he bolted from under the bench and slammed the door shut. The white devil turned its hideous, misshapen head to its equally merciless captor. It attempted to turn around, but its sizable bulk prevented it from doing so. It roared in white-hot anger at its predicament. Melvin pushed the horn down and held it there. In his final moment, he stood courageously and sneered at the Hulk with ice-cold hatred.
Burn in hell, you son of a bitch.
The bus erupted in a ball of thick flames. The inky sky rained glass and metal in every direction. The heat was so intense that Craig and Lorna felt it from their hiding place, many yards away.
Oh my gosh, Craig, we did it. We scorched that thing.
God bless good old Melvin and his genius plan.
A look of contemplation came across Lorna's face.
Do you think he's telling his bitch wife what I said about...
God, Lorna! Will you let it go already?
I just don't want his gallant death to be in vain. Do you mind?
Craig changed the subject.
Think anybody will believe us when we tell them what happened?
Who the heck cares?
Lorna sniffed.
I just want to be warm again. Honestly, my nipples are wearing parkas.
Please, don't even get me started on my boy south of the border. My ball sack looks like a sea turtle. What say we get out of here?
Craig walked to the side of the road.
Hey, look, you can still make out Dirk's footprints.
Let's hit it, Maestro.
The frozen duo of southern white trash placed their arms around each other and trudged down the snowy path back to civilization, or whatever you'd call a town named after moose genitalia. As they left the burning wreckage further behind with every step, they took notice of the ironic beauty it created around them. The warm orange glow that made the white cedar trees look like giant candles. The mighty fire illuminating the snow as if it were lighting the path home. Its splendor made their lives feel more special and beautiful.
Craig, I want you to promise me two things.
Name 'em, sweet mama.
First, never let me decide where we go on vacation again.
And the other'n?
If we ever have youngins, please tell them you're their stepdaddy. That way they won't grow up fearing they'll be just like you.
Craig smiled.
I love you too, Lorna. I love you too.
And that was Craig's White Devil by P.D. Williams. A good reminder that sometimes it's best to stick with the wildlife that smokes cigarettes and drinks liquor. I won't tell you they're always harmless, but they can rarely fit your whole body in their mouth. A little about the author. P.D. has added a new book to his catalog called Beneath Her Feet. It's a screwball comedy thriller narrated by our very own madman, Jeff Sturdivant. The Kindle version is available on Amazon. The audiobook is available on Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. Velox Publishing has issued the print copy of one of his previous short horror fiction collections, Dark House, Many Rooms. You can buy it at several well-known online and brick-and-mortar bookstores, such as Barnes & Noble. If you'd care to communicate with the man directly, you can meet him behind the Greyhound bus station at... Oh, sorry, wrong place. You can reach him via Facebook at P.D. Williams Horror Writer or on Instagram.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till tomorrow. Chester and I'll be over at the Weekend Abode tomorrow night at the Sinister Somnolence YouTube channel. Meet me there on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I know the Theater of the Mind stuff is tough to square with either, but let's just pretend, all right? It's all real to him, damn it. So grab a drink for the road, friend. May the wind be at your back. May beneath her feet grace the virtual shelves of your audiobook library. And may the road rise up to meet you. And until next time, go fuck yourselves.